Coming up, Tom Haverstraw joins me to talk about the latest on Kawhi Leonard, and we answer some of your mailbag questions. That's coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. I'm Kevin O'Connor. We're going to talk about Kawhi and Leonard, some other stuff in the NBA, answering your mailbag questions as well. Joining me to do it is Tom Haverstraw. Tom, what's up?
Not a whole lot, man. Happy to be here. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great today, man. So I watched the Pablo Torre Finds Out episode this morning. This comes the day after Baxter Holmes at ESPN reported sources close to the National Basketball Players Association with knowledge of the investigation, the Aspiration Kawhi Leonard investigation, said the union wouldn't hesitate to take the matter to arbitration if the NBA sought penalties without sufficient evidence proving the claim that the Clippers have denied since the league's inquiry began nearly 10 months ago. In other words, Baxter is writing that this could drag into 2027, potentially. So that would not just mean into October, into the start of the 26-27 season, but into 2027, the next calendar year, midway through the 26-27 season. And this isn't the biggest surprise, Tom. I know John Hollinger over at The Athletic has written about this a little bit as well, how like just because they come to a result or a penalty, it doesn't mean that it won't be contested and that this could drag out even further. So that's the latest on Kawhi Leonard from ESPN.
Yeah, Kev, like when you talk about this case, there's a lot of stages that have to happen, right? One, Wachtell Lipton, the independent, I put that in quotes because the NBA is paying this independent investigation, the law firm. Once that wraps up, that's only one step in the process. Once that wraps up, Adam Silver will have to review that. And then it goes to arbitration if there is a dispute about the findings here. And that's what Baxter Holmes at ESPN is reporting, is that even if this investigation wraps up as Adam Silver has contended that he wants this to wrap up before the start of the season, I think part of the Adam Silver motivation to get this wrapping up soon is because he wants to get this arbitration, the settlement, the dispute, all of that between the two sides, have enough cushion for this to be settled entirely before the start of the season. So why would this report come out now? I think it is an indication that both sides have an incentive to get this over with and move on, because Kawhi Leonard wants to play basketball games, presumably for the Toronto Raptors, as soon as possible, because he doesn't have a lot of time left in his NBA career. The longer he sits out and the longer he isn't able to be in training camp with a team and ramp up at this stage of his career, the increased risk of injury happens. And of course, the Toronto Raptors don't want that to happen. And the Los Angeles Clippers don't want Kawhi Leonard's contract to be voided or to be suspended, because that probably means that the deal itself, the agreed upon deal with the picks coming from the Raptors, they will probably have less of a return if Kawhi Leonard and his status for this upcoming season is in jeopardy. If, let's say, he's suspended for 50 games or he's suspended for 25 games, that's a big chunk of the remaining of his career when you look at Kawhi Leonard at his age. So yeah, if I'm the Raptors and he is under a suspension, I'm going to throw in some protections into these picks. I'm not going to put in multiple picks into a deal. And so that's why I think everybody is looking at that 2027 date and saying, we don't want that to happen. Let's figure out a way that we can get this, consummated before the start of the season, so we don't eat into the season and then hang up the deal even further.
And that deal, just to restate the terms, it was Brandon Ingram, Grady Dick, an unprotected first in 2031 and 33, a swap in 27, and 2 second-round draft picks to LA for Kawhi Leonard. It's a lot to give up. I mean, Ingram was an all-star last year. That's a lot of draft picks for a guy who's had the injury history that Kawhi Leonard does. And then obviously this aspiration investigation hanging over everything. So Mike Vorkanoff over at The Athletic, he's been on top of everything involving business matters of the NBA as a writer and reporter over at The Athletic. And he had 2 weeks ago, he said the NBA, their firm is investigating whether the Clippers improperly covered expenses for Leonard but were not reimbursed for them, according to his sources. And he wrote, and the firm has examined if Leonard had a previously unreported endorsement deal with another company, those sources said. And that's what's interesting about the Pablo Torre Finds Out episode that dropped this morning on his YouTube page with a story about an equity stake that Kawhi Leonard has in Rhode Island FC, which is like a soccer club in Rhode Island that's not part of MLS. It's a lower level soccer team. And Torre found that Kawhi registered two shell companies, KL2 RIFC LLC and KL2 RIFC Real Estate LLC, on January 2nd, 2024. And then 8 days later, on January 10th of 2024, Kawhi signed an extension taking an $8.6 million discount. And with this one, there's not really hard evidence necessarily, but it is at least suspicious that it's once again another deal where these LLCs were created right before signing an extension, just like with Aspiration. It's suspicious that this is another big secret. RIFC, when Daniel Tice with the Clippers became a part owner with them, they announced it. It was big news that Daniel Tice, an NBA player, was investing. He was an owner in RIFC. And with Kawhi, it's just been silence. Nobody knows. They talked to the owner of Rhode Island FC, the governor of Rhode Island, the marketing agency that gave the owner of the team and the governor tickets to the Clippers season opener that year. This marketing agency happens to also handle Visit Rwanda, who's the New Jersey sponsor that replaced Aspiration for the Clippers. And nobody has answers to Kawhi's investment in Rhode Island FC. Nobody really wants to talk about it. I thought it was the funniest moment to me, Tom, of the whole podcast, was when WPRI, who did this investigation in partnership with Pablo Torre, finds out. They asked the governor of Rhode Island about going to that game, and he's like, I paid for the ticket, I invited myself to the game. It's like such a strange answer to say you attended a basketball game, but yeah, it's all very suspicious still. But there's nothing hard evidence in this necessarily.
No, there's not like a quote-unquote smoking gun here. I think Pablo has reported in, I think, 11 of these episodes, a lot more items, uncovered a lot more items in the court cases or in the bankruptcy filings and in these documents throughout this 10-month investigation that Pablo is undergone with Amin El-Hassan and David Sampson over there at Pablo Torre Finds Out. But it does raise a lot more questions. Why the continued secrecy? Everyone's lips are sealed around Kawhi Leonard's marketing deals or equity stakes, the endorsement deals. No one wants to talk about it. But Daniel Tice, a teammate or a player of the Los Angeles Clippers at the same time as the extension was struck, everything was public. Hey, we're going to take a picture like everybody else with the jersey and having an NBA player, a pretty obscure NBA player, flaunting that he is now part of this organization, which is what you want in a marketing deal. You know, you want as many celebrities and powerful figures to lend credence and credibility to your organization and raise the publicity of your franchise. And the fact that they kept denying, or at least being so evasive and sidestepping, anytime the name Kawhi Leonard came up in these interviews, they were suddenly very quiet and did not want to confirm on the record that Kawhi Leonard was an investor initially when Pablo Torre reached out. And that's, to me, Kev, why is it so secret? Why is everyone walking on eggshells? I understand that Kawhi Leonard is not the most public-facing guy, and he would want to have some of his public dealings to be on under wraps somewhat. Like, he's not going to be doing a national campaign for Rhode Island FC. I understand that. But at least one appearance, and when you're asked about it, why wouldn't you be like, hell yeah, we got an NBA, a superstar, NBA champion, finals MVP, who's a co-owner of this tier two soccer club in Pawtucket. Like, of course you would want that to be public knowledge. But even now, as Pablo Torre investigates this and asks for comment, and as the local reporting team does, I don't understand the secrecy unless there's something deeper that they don't want to get out. And that's the question of everybody who's investigating this, whether it's Pablo Torre or Wachtell Lipton, the NBA, the law firm that's investigating Steve Ballmer and the Clippers in this, is there any sort of link between Steve Ballmer, the Los Angeles Clippers, and this ownership group, along with the governor of Rhode Island. What is the nature of that business relationship? And if there is a link, whether Steve Ballmer invested in previous companies with the owner of, his name is Brett Johnson, the owner of our Rhode Island FC. If there is any sort of business tie to these that you could theoretically funnel money that is being publicly funded by the taxpayers in Rhode Island, there's a lot in this story, but the taxpayers of Rhode Island were funding this development, real estate development project alongside of the stadium deal under the auspice that this would be a low-income housing development. And that's why the Kawhi Leonard LLC that says real estate is so interesting, that yes, if Kawhi Leonard was indeed really interested in supporting low-income housing, then totally, if this is a legit deal. But there hasn't been, according to Pablo Torre's reporting, there is no low-income housing being built in this project. And so it beckons the question, is this the same thing as the fake tree planting aspiration thing, the scheme, where there are no trees out there, there are no low-income houses, and the Occam's razor would be, and this isn't enough beyond the pale just to speculate about this for the law firm and the NBA league office. But Kev, if there's no trees being planted and if there's no actual low-income housing regarding this project, then where did these millions of dollars go? And why were the millions of dollars spent? And why are these LLCs set up? And that's what Wachtell Lipton and the NBA has to figure out, is where is this money going towards? And if it is, if there are no trees and there is no publicity about but Kawhi Leonard's involvement in this, then there's a lot of explaining that has to be done here.
I mean, that's like the true story underlying all of it, is how Rhode Island had this deal, $27 million was supposed to be used to build housing around the stadium. And with inflation, they claimed in their side of things that due to the stadium's ballooning cost, they needed to put that money instead into housing. They put it into the stadium itself. Otherwise, they couldn't afford it. So the public understandably would feel like they got bait and switched in this scenario. So like they get screwed over with their tax money, like with most things with your tax money in every state. So ultimately, I think for the public, it sucks. That's the real true story here. But for us, from an NBA basketball standpoint, Kawhi Leonard being involved is just just crazy. So like crazy. No trees, no houses. Oh boy.
And so a lot of LLCs.
A lot of LLCs. Yeah. No appearances. So with Kawhi Leonard, look, man, I think the deal is going to happen. I still think the deal is going to happen. Everybody I've talked to still thinks it's going to happen. I know Mike Forkanoff did an appearance last week on the radio. He thinks it's going to still happen, and he's very plugged into this situation as well. I still think it's going to happen. But, is there any part of you, Tom, if you're a Raptors fan, where you're like, I'm feeling a little uneasy. Maybe I'd rather this not happen. Maybe I'd rather have another year of Brandon Ingram and have those two future first round draft picks unprotected and have my future pick swap in 2027. Maybe I'd rather hang on to those assets and wait for the next guy to come around and just roll it back with this young roster and see what happens instead of bringing back old Kawhi. Is there any part of you that doesn't want this deal to happen if you're a Raptors fan?
I mean, it depends how deep this goes. I mean, let's say the Raptors aren't going to have Kawhi Leonard by opening night, and the longer this drags out,
let's assume he will be there by opening night. Let's just assume he will be. He's still in his mid-30s with a distinct injury history.
Just turned 35. And if he has a real training camp and preseason, and he's able to build up his body in time for the NBA season, I would say that the Raptors for sure would still want to do this deal. But at 30, he just turned 35, and he's going into a season in which I think the Toronto Raptors have real championship aspirations, pun intended. And if this does drag in past past training camp, past the start date of the season, so if it goes into November or it goes into December and he's having to really ramp up mid-season, I think the Toronto Raptors are looking at this deal a little bit different. I still think they do it, but I think the Clippers have an incentive to get this investigation wrapped up soon, to get those assets, and certainly the Toronto Raptors. Everybody has an incentive to wrap this up quickly, except of course, Wachtell Lipton. That man, those billing hours are gonna, the amount of time that this investigation continues to drag on, and this new, whether this Vorkunov's report about a second endorsement deal that they're investigating, whether that is the RIFC deal, we don't even know. There hasn't been confirmation on the Pablo side or on the Athletic side that that is indeed the additional scheme that they're investigating, or at least the endorsement deal that they're investigating. So there could be even more that we don't know about. But again, like, this is the job of the law firm and the job of the NBA. Adam Silver should have had a deadline on this, and he's gone on the record in interviews being like, one thing we don't want to happen is we wrap up our investigation, we announce our punishment, and then more comes out. Well, in that case, then no investigation would ever be complete. And I think if that's the concern, we really need to get this over with, because I think all these parties need to move on. And I think at this point, there's so much evidence that has piled up. It's just up to the NBA to adjudicate this matter and figure out, you know, because look, the Joe Smith cap circumvention case with Glenn Taylor back in 2000, that was an open and shut case compared to this one, because there was a lawsuit amongst Joe Smith's former agent, Eric Fleischer, and his new agent. They had a dispute, and they decided, hey, we're going to court over whether Kevin Garnett or my list of clients are being stolen. And there was a smoking gun in that sense, a written document, allegedly, that I haven't seen the document, but this is part of the court case, is that Joe Smith had a written agreement between him and the ownership, Glenn Taylor, that there was going to be a 7-year pact as long as they did like 3-year, 1-year to acquire the bird rights. And there was a written piece of paper. Ostensibly, we can surmise that there is no written document yet. Otherwise, Pablo Torre probably would have uncovered it, or the investigation would have uncovered it, because that would be a swift punishment in that case, if there is a written document. And if there's not, I think what Adam Silver is saying here is, if there's not a written document, then this is where it gets messy between the players' union, the Clippers, and the NBA owners.
Incredibly messy. I just can't wait till it's over with, Tom. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I just want some clarity. But it does seem like this could drag on. As Coda Steve said in the chat, this investigation is headed to the FBI. It's not wrapping up quickly. Obviously, the FBI is already involved with the aspiration side of things here. We'll see how this ends up developing over the course of time. Joe Sandberg with the aspiration side was sentenced to 14 years in federal prison in June of 2026. We'll be right back. Let's move on to something fun with a mailbag question over on X. Bort Sampson added me the other day saying he loves playing the 73-9 game, which requires you to build a roster using $100 million in order to construct a roster that can defeat the 73-9 Warriors. And he asked us, as part of this exercise, what would be the best roster you could make with $100 million in today's NBA, excluding LeBron James? And this is limited to a 5-person lineup, so you don't have to worry about the bench. Thank you for the question. If you want to submit future questions, just at me on X or Instagram at Kevin O'Connor, or you can comment on YouTube or Spotify on the podcast feed, or email us at kocshow@yahoosports.com to answer this question. I'll go first here, Tom. We both constructed our rosters. For me, Victor Wembanyama and SGA were locks. Those two guys were in every single roster that I made, and those guys are about $57 million combined. And then after that, I toyed around with like a wing combination, Castle, Coward, Jaden McDaniels. I tried Jaden McDaniels, Denny Avdia, AJ Mitchell, and I looked at those teams and I'm like, I need more size at the four. I want to support Wemby. And so then I tried Aaron Gordon, Modest Buzelis, AJ Mitchell, and Aaron Gordon, Modest Buzelis, Cam Spencer. And then I was worried a bit about wing defense. And so I landed on this. Victor Wembanyama, Cooper Flagg, Cam Boozer, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And this is my roster. It totals up to $98.445 $1 million. And so I think with this roster, what I have, I know I have a rookie in Cam Boozer and a second year guy in Cooper Flagg, but I think with SGA, I have the best guard in the league, arguably the best player. With Wemby, I have the best big in the league, arguably the best player in the league. And he's cheaper than Jokic and some of these other guys. SGA is cheaper than Anthony Edwards. Nah, have him at the two. I get a 3-and-D guy, knockdown shooter, can do a little bit off the dribble, really good defender. Cooper Flagg was statistically an excellent isolation defender last year, so I feel like I get some wing defense. Less need for scoring with him, but he can provide it if needed. And then Cam Boozer, knockdown shooting, connective passing, size, and rebounding. I like this roster a lot. What do you think about my team, and what did you come up with, Tom?
Love it. Love it. Jealous of it, because I actually I kind of threw around the same names here as you did. Cooper Flagg was on one of my iterations. Nikhil Alexander Walker was on one of my iterations. Cam Boozer being 18 years old, you know, not anymore, but like, how he's the youngest guy in a loaded rookie class. Wasn't sure, and you know me, I'm a huge Cam Boozer fan. Wasn't sure that if this was a trying to win a championship right now, if he would be ready for it. And Cooper Flagg, same concern here with Cooper Flagg and his age. And so I look at your team and I get really jealous, given that Cooper Flagg's 19 and Cam Boozer, is he still 18 at this point?
He might have just turned 19. I'm not sure exactly when his specific birthday is. July 18th, so he just turned 19. Happy birthday.
Yeah, so you got two 19-year-olds, which is what you're going to end up happening with a lot of these rookie-scale contracts, is you're going to be mining those rookie-scale contracts to find guys that are artificially capped their salary well below their value in a free market. And I would say Cooper Flagg, Cam Boozer fits that. Nikhil Alexander Walker, the three-point shooting, he shot 49% on open threes last season. So you're talking about, if you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Victor Wembanyama, the passing of Cam Boozer as a big, ball handling and the physicality, the defensive Cooper Flagg, he's going to get a lot of open shots. And he's the cousin of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So there's a familial atmosphere on this team too. Mm-hmm. So I love this. I think that's a really good squad. I went a little bit older on my team. So I actually, same thing, building blocks, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Victor Wembanyama, Con Knipl, Tamani Kamara, and Peyton Pritchard. The reason why I went here is I wanted like a no doubt wing defender who can knock down threes. Tamani Kamara shot 37% on high volume last year for the Blazers, and he guards everybody 1 through 5. So it's not even a concern for me. Wing defense on this club, Con Knipl, Peyton Pritchard, as good of movement shooters, off the dribble shooters as you will find in the NBA. So Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, of course, at his size, you need someone at that size at the point guard position next to Peyton Pritchard to make up for that diminutive frame that Peyton has out there. But when you got Tamani Kamara with the shooting around Victor Wembanyama, you've got really smart players, low turnover guys. In this, I just think this is two-way dominance and three-point shooting maximized around Shai Gilgeous and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the downhill scoring. I just I put a premium on shooting with this lineup, and a little bit older, Peyton Pritchard, Con Knipl, and Tamani Kamara, a little bit more physicality and a little bit more experience than the three surrounding your same cornerstones in Shai and Big Vic. So what are your thoughts on Pritchard, Knipl, and Tamani being the other three on my squad?
I can't believe you didn't put Danny on your team. You could have squeezed in Danny in there instead of Pritchard, I'm pretty sure. I'm almost positive you could have squeezed in Danny at 13.125. Yeah, you could squeeze him in there over Pritchard. So you'd have a little bit more size, a little less shooting, but you still have handling, downhill attacking. You just didn't want two Blazers.
To me, it's a duplicitous.
That's why, Tom. You're not with the team anymore. Same thing?
I did this. I was like, wait, could I just merge the Blazers, the Spurs, and the Thunder into one team? Because exactly. If you're like me, you're just shifting around AJ Mitchell and Cason Wallace, and then you got Tamani Kamara and Denny Avdija, and Donovan Klingon's also on a ridiculous contract too. So it's like, you look at those three rosters and you can pretty much field your team. To me, the role of SGA and Denny Avdija, I feel like the overlap in your skill sets, I feel like you wouldn't get the most out of that roster. So I wanted to diversify the skill sets and optimize my lineup, not just for defense, but for shooting too. And so that's why Denny Avdija, not on my final squad, but I also, I don't know about you, I had the Thompson twins on one of my squads. So I had, if I was going Jokic at the five, and then you could go just freak athletes, defenders, it was a crazy team that I think I had AJ Mitchell, the Thompson twins, and Cooper Flagg at my four. It was just athletes and dogs defensively around Nikola Jokic. And the 3-point shooting might not be there, two guys who can't space on the same team. But to me, it was just like, what if you had the Thompson twins on the same team as Nikola Jokic? What would happen?
It's a fun exercise in part because I feel like as I was going through it, it's like I'm finding who are the best value contracts in the NBA. And that was part of it. Like, obviously, guys in their rookie deals are already good, but I think I just sort of skimmed through some of the guys on my long list. Scotty Barnes, $41 million. Aaron Gordon, $33 million. Derek White, $30 million. Trey Murphy, $27 million. Jaden McDaniels, $26 million. Josh Hart, $21 million. Brandon Miller, $15 million. Nikhil Alexander Walker, $14 million. Damian Lillard, if he's looking good after the Achilles, $13.4 million. Denny, Boozer, Knipple, Castle at $10 million. Pritchard, $7.7 million. Kaysen Wallace, $7.4 million. I tried getting him on some iterations of my team. Colin Murray Boyles at $6.6 million. Keontae George, $6.5 million. I originally had him on one of my teams with Anthony Edwards. Zach Edey, $6.3 million. Cedric Coward, $6 million. Jaime Jaquez, $5.9 million. Buzelis, Keyshawn George, and Washington, $3.1 million. AJ Mitchell, $2.8 million. Cam Spencer, $2.4 million. So you mentioned Portland and San Antonio. Memphis, a lot of names from Memphis when it comes to value contracts.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it feels like there's a commonality with some of these teams. Portland, Memphis, San Antonio. There's like a, if you have one of them, you have really two or three or four of them you could point to. You mentioned Klingon as well earlier when it came to the Blazers. There's a lot of guys from the same teams, I believe.
I'll just say now, I think the Memphis Grizzlies, I'm hammering the over on that team next year. Big time. I think I did
hammer. So, it.
Yeah,
I don't gamble, but I gambled on that.
This seems like a safe bet to me, is the idea of the Memphis Grizzlies 28? Just a ton. 28
and a half, Tom, right? 28 and a half wins? Ridiculous. It's too low.
They got so many good players on that team on, I think, just underrated. Cam Spencer, you mentioned, Coward. It just, you put Cam Boozer on that team, and if Zach Edey is at all healthy, and who knows if he's going to be, that team is going to be a 40-win team. And especially with the incentives of the draft reform, is that the Memphis Grizzlies don't want to tank. They want to win games next year because they're going to have, if they're in that kind of 9, 10, 11 in the draft lotto odds, they're going to have a pretty good shot at this thing. So I think the Memphis Grizzlies are a deep sleeper in the NBA next year. And I found myself going through their roster a lot of times, shuffling their names into this exercise. So yeah, I think the Memphis Grizzlies are going to just way beat that over 28 and a half.
Another question from at Sporting Phil on X. He said,
wait, hold on. Before we go on to something else, can I read you the list? Because really what this game who do you want to put around Victor Wembanyama? Because Victor Wembanyama is going to earn $16.9 million next year. Here's a list of guys who are making more than Victor Wembanyama next year. He's not even top three on his own team, first of all. Keldon Johnson at 17 and a half next season. Patrick Williams at 18 next season. Jakob Poeltl, 19 and a half next season. Kyle Kuzma at 20 next season. DeAndre Hunter at 24. And John Collins also making more than Victor Wembanyama. So I think this is the real story, is the Wemby window that the Spurs have here is like, Victor Wembanyama, who I think could win and probably is the best player in the NBA going into next season. You had him as your MVP last year in the regular season, was not sharp against the Knicks in the finals. He's making less than Patrick Williams next year, and that is a cheat code. That is a NBA front office cheat code. It's nuts that Wemby is making less than those guys.
And we'll be right back after this break.
We'll be right back.
Next question from Sporting Phil. This is a funny one. Why are players' heights measured at the top of their heads and not at their shoulders? I think it's because it's the standard. That's just the way we measure height. That's just the way we do it. Like, we have standing reach and we have wingspan to measure what's functional size. There's, you know, max vertical and vertical leaping for measuring how they jump and how their bodies make a difference on the court. Like, we have the tracking cameras to measure how quickly they move and whatnot. I think it's really just as simple as that. That's just the way we do it. Like, it would be weird if we had measurements up to the shoulders, and like the shoulders, there's no like clear definable spot. Like, I get the point. Like, everybody's got different head sizes. Like, there's a Mark Andreessen, the investor guy. You know Mark Andreessen, Tom? You know that name?
Yeah.
Egg-shaped head. He's like 6'4", 6'5". He might actually only be 6 foot if his head weren't so long.
Are short necks the new market inefficiency is the real question. There's just a lot of guys in the league with short necks that are way undervalued. I think, now that I'm thinking about it, do long necks, your ability to flop, I feel like it's actually a skill. If you have a long neck, you can accentuate embellished contact more. So maybe there is something to having a long neck, why you would want to have a player on your team with a long neck. But yeah, the whole Victor Wembanyama, how tall is he, is something that I've been covering for a while now. And it's so ridiculous that we don't have like a pretty, like, why do we do it standing up? We should be measuring guys laying down. Just have them heel to shoulder and we'd be done with this.
I'd love to know the true height for these guys. So it's like Kevin Garnett's probably a 7-footer. He was never listed as a 7-footer in his career. Kevin Durant, same thing. And Victor Wembanyama, what is he really? I think he's 7'7". I've been around Boban Marjanovic. I've been around Taco Fall. Victor's taller than those guys. I've been around him too. I interviewed him. I stood next to him in a photo with him. He's taller than those guys. So I'd love to know his true height. I think 7'7" would be my bet. Draymond Green signed a 1-year deal, $27.7 million to re-sign with the Golden State Warriors. That's the same amount of money that he opted out of to give the Warriors flexibility to pursue LeBron James and other potential acquisitions this offseason. What's interesting in this deal, Tom, is the fact that he had an implied no-trade clause. As Bobby Marks outlined, he said, a player that signs a 1 or 2 year contract with an option has an early bird rights the following season, has the right to veto any trade. Green is waiving this right. And so Draymond, who the Warriors tried trading 5 months ago for Giannis Antetokounmpo, has waived his implied no-trade clause and instead is receiving a 15% trade kicker on the deal. So Draymond signs for 1 year. Warriors can still trade him, and they probably could try to trade him again potentially. Clearly, they don't want to trade Jimmy Butler. Maybe they try to trade Draymond. Very interesting to me that Draymond decided to waive that no trade clause. There must be an understanding that, hey, we want the flexibility, and we want the flexibility involving you. We'll give you this trade kicker as a return for that.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that Draymond Green coming back, obviously he wants to continue riding this Steph Curry, the career of Steph Curry. He wants to finish his career with Steph, if all else equal, sure. But we also know that if Steph decides, you know what, this is my last year, or I don't think I'm going to be suiting up every night in this season, I'm all banged up, like I don't feel like I want to do this season for a championship push, then maybe Draymond just decides, you know what, I want to go somewhere else. And that's why I think he's waiving this, is to have more trade value for other teams to not have to inquire, hey, is he going to veto this trade? In actuality, what I think Draymond Green is doing is trying to make himself a little bit more available, make himself a little bit more valuable on the open market. Whether he actually does this or not remains to be seen, decides I want to leave Golden State. But to me, this is just another signal that the Warriors are building for the post-Steph, post-Draymond. They want to have maximum flexibility in case they move off of Draymond. And in that case, you know, does Steve Kerr and Stephen Curry decide, look, they look around like like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in the empty house and be like, what are we doing here still? That's to me the biggest story of this offseason regarding the Warriors is their inactivity, complete lack of any deals. When you talk about adding any players, automatic NBA, we talked about this on The Big Number yesterday, did a whole graphic showing all the additions of these teams through trades and through free agency acquisitions. And there's a big, fat, empty space of white next to the Golden State Warriors. And they brought back Draymond Green, but I would not be surprised if Draymond Green gets traded this upcoming season. And I would not be surprised if Stephen Curry gets cold feet on retiring as a Golden State Warrior, simply because if the Warriors are a 30-win team next year, does he really want to finish his last year or years in the NBA on a floundering team?
Maybe he will. Maybe he won't. And I think what happens over these next 6 months or so is going to dictate a lot of that. Do they make another move? Is Jimmy Butler able to return next season or not? It's hard to know. Dawson Montgomery 297 in the YouTube comments on my last podcast commented, Steph to Toronto makes so much sense. Quickly, a blue chip young guy in future first. His wife's from Ontario, grew up there while his dad was a Raptor. Family ties matter and the team would be perfect for him. Look, I think Toronto would be a great basketball fit for Stephen Curry. Two-man game with Scottie Barnes would be a beautiful thing. And Cauley Murray-Boyles is the closest young player we've had to Draymond Green. It would be awesome to see those guys together. I just can't see anything but Charlotte. I just don't. I talked about it on the pod earlier this week. I just think if Steph is going to leave Golden State, I think it's going to be Charlotte. And that's it. I can't imagine any other team for Stephen Curry, except for the Charlotte Hornets, unless he wants to like ring chase, maybe he does want to ring chase. Maybe he believes Toronto would give him a better opportunity to win today and he could do the Charlotte thing 3 years from now. Like that's always a possibility. But I just can't see anything but Charlotte for Stephen Curry. But it does seem like there's a lot of Raptors fans that have commented about Steph. His wife's from here. His dad played here. He spent some years growing up here. There's a lot of Raptors fans posting about that. And so, hey, you never know. It's fun to dream, right?
Yeah, I'll add two other teams to this list. A reunion with Bob Myers in Philadelphia. LeBron obviously just did a 2-year deal, not a 1-year deal with the 76ers. And you do have that the connection between Bob and Stephen Curry. And if Steph looks at this future of the Warriors
for
and
Jaylen Brown, actually, is that where you're giving up? Jaylen Brown?
Well, if we want to talk about it, the Warriors reportedly considered Jaylen Brown, very quickly considered Jaylen Brown and decided, yeah, you know what? We don't feel like he could be the bridge to the next generation post Steph era. I think there's a couple things there. One, it's not so much that they don't believe he's good enough. It's that contract that he would likely want an extension at, you know, basically 300 million plus going forward for Jaylen Brown. It's a pretty big commitment for a guy who's going to be on the other side of his peak with the Golden State Warriors in the post-Steph era. And the second thing on that is, you know, Steph Curry is an expiring contract this upcoming season. He's eligible for an extension. And I'm curious how that's going to look, how that's going to play out in Golden State, whether he accepts it and just says, yeah, I do want to lock in for a number of years and get my last big payday under a big extension with the Golden State Warriors. They can pay me more than anybody else. Or does he look at what LeBron James did and say, you know what, maybe I should do the same thing, is just go out and maximize my happiness and sign somewhere else. And that would be fascinating, is if he signed on a vet minimum deal with the Philadelphia 76ers after free agency next year. So I'm just throwing that out there. And then, of course, the San Antonio Spurs. This would heat up a lot if Steve Kerr decided, I want to be Popovich's successor in San Antonio and coach Victor Wembanyama. Obviously, he re-signed with the Golden State Warriors. That's not the case. But man, I just think about if Steve Kerr was able to maneuver things a little bit differently and be able to succeed Greg Popovich and have Victor Wembanyama, Dylan Harper, Stephon Castle, and also Stephen Curry finishing out next to Wemby. What a perfect pairing between skill sets of Steph Curry and Victor Wembanyama. So those are the teams that I've got my eye. I'm with you. Charlotte, San Antonio, and Philadelphia, Toronto. Those four teams I'm looking at as potential Stephen Curry destinations.
Killian Gomez, not Killian Hayes, thankfully, in the YouTube comments says Stephen Boston with Tatum. I think Boston would be an interesting one too. But again, like I've got a hard time imagining anything except for Charlotte. But I do think Boston from a basketball standpoint does make sense. And from a financial standpoint, they could flip Paul George. They have picks. There's something that makes sense there. And if you're opening the door to him signing for the minimum with teams, I would add Miami as well. Play with Giannis. I think Miami, I would add them into the conversation if you want to mention Philadelphia.
Can I just real quick, Emmanuel, quickly to back up to the Toronto thing. He's not a young player. Can we stop that?
He was saying Emmanuel quickly, comma, a young player as in like another guy. Yes.
Okay. I thought he was saying that Emmanuel quickly is like a young prospect that they can build around. Okay.
That's how I read it. I read it as Emmanuel quickly, comma, a young player as in like add another young guy, like, I don't know, Jacoby Walter, something like that. I don't know.
He's blue chip young guy, meaning, okay.
No, he's not. He's 20. He's going to be 27 next season. Yeah. He's not a young guy. And he's not a blue chipper either. I don't know what you give up. Because if you're giving up two picks and a swap for Kawhi Leonard, you don't have a lot left over. Steph would have to like steer his way there, and the Warriors want to do him solid, which I think they would. If he would ask out, I would think that's exactly what they would do for him. Arctic Wolf in the chat said, if I'm Steph, I'm ring chasing. The Warriors have been in purgatory since the 24 play-in exit. That is 100% true. I feel the same way, but we'll see if the Warriors actually come through and actually do something besides just draft the XL Underboard. That's all they've done this offseason, and that's it. Let's see if they do anything else during the rest of the summer, during the offseason. I don't think so, Tom. Tom, we got a long offseason ahead. It's July 30th. August is right around the corner. My next show will be in August. Who knows? Maybe by then we'll get a little bit more news. But also, it's the offseason. It's time to have some fun as well. It's going to do some redrafts. Going to have some fun conversations. Lots to do looking ahead to next season and looking back in the NBA as well. So August will feature more of that as we still get a little bit of NBA news trickling in this offseason. Tom, any fun weekend plans?
Gonna meet up with some of my high school buddies for our 40th birthday celebration here in the Smoky Mountains. Wow. So I'm really looking forward to that. We're doing a live fantasy football draft in person for the first time in 15 years that we've been running this league. We're gonna do it in person. I don't know if you've done a live fantasy football draft before, but I cannot wait.
I used to run them.
And it's super fun, but also look at the date. Drafting a fantasy football team this early in the offseason feels like a fool's errand. So it should be super interesting.
You're going to have injuries in August. There's going to be training camp reports. It's going to change the draft stock. Everybody, it's too early for a draft. You guys are going to have a lot of regrets. A lot of regrets with your drafts. But hey.
Oh, man.
Everything's different. Maybe there'll be a lot of trading before opening night. I'm thinking about going to opening night at Patriots Seahawks. I'm trying to get a couple friends to go fly out to Seattle. I've never been to Seattle. I've always had an attraction to Seattle throughout different stages of my life. When I was a kid, I loved Ken Griffey Jr. like most boys did who were born in 1990 or so, around that range like I was. And then, you know, I loved Jimi Hendrix when I was 15, 16, 17 years old. I always loved Jimmy. He was born in Seattle. The late Paul Allen had an old Hendrix museum that has since been named the Museum of Pop. And it has an awesome Hendrix exhibit there that I've always wanted to see. So I might make a trip out to Seattle this year for Patriots, Seahawks, and Museum of Pop as well in September.
That'd be awesome. No, it's one of the tough things about not doing Blazers games anymore is just the Pacific Northwest is spectacular, especially in the summertime. And if you can get there when the weather's great, it's a really magical place. So. That's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to next week when we build fantasy rosters with $50 million instead of $100 million that we just did. So that'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to New York this weekend. That'll be a good time. Going out with a couple friends. Going to pick them up tomorrow morning and have my Tesla drive us all the way to New York City, 270-something miles straight, driven by a robot. Going to be fun. Good time. Tom, you enjoy the weekends with your fantasy draft. Best of luck. And I'll enjoy my
Who would you take number one? Who would you take?
Do you have the number one pick?
No, we're going to do a draft for the like the draft slots. So that's another thing we do. But would you want the number one pick? And so, if you were going to have the number one pick, would you go Bijan or would you go Jahmyr Gibbs? What would you?
Is it a snake draft? So every league's different. Every league's different.
Yep. PPR, snake draft, 12-team league. Yep.
Give me Bijan. Bijan is upside, safe, and he's fun. He's such a fun player as well. Yeah. Give me Bijan. But Gibbs is right there too. I don't know. I haven't thought about it. No, definitely not. haven't thought a lot about it because I'm trying to organize my own league because I'm not sure my friend league is happening this year. The commissioner hasn't given clarity on if he wants to run the league. I'll pick it up if he wants me to. I used to run the league before I retired a few years ago. I used to run it.
Well,
organize live drafts. I'm open to taking over.
There you go.
It's my old job. I used to love doing it.
I'll report back next week. How about that? On what I decided to do.
Yeah, tell me your team and next week. That'll be part of a segment we do. Tom, thank you so much for joining me, man. Have a good weekend. Thank you to Emmy and the team for producing today's episode. Subscribe to Yahoo Sports NBA if you've not done so already. Leave a 5-star review for the Kevin O'Connor Show as well. It does help us out. Have a good weekend, everybody. Talk to you soon.